now heading towards our second last session, that is navigating global investing in multipolar world. So now that we have understood what debt mutual funds are and opportunities that are in fixed income, we are here now to understand it on a things on a global level. And so that is why we are going ahead with the topic of global investing in multipolar world, which can be challenging but also presents a range of opportunities. The term multipolar world refers to a geopolitical environment in which there are multiple economic and political power centers rather than a single dominant superpower. This can create uncertainty and volatility in the global market, as well as opportunities for investors who can navigate these complexities. Let's discuss this in detail with Mr. Ashish Chanda, founder and CEO at AI Crystal, at Crystal AI. The investment committee at Crystal.ai has over 150 years of experience combined. Most of them are ex-bankers from JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and Citigroup, etc. The company is a true fintech at heart. Over 50% of their staff is a coding literate. Prior to founding Crystal.ai, Ashish headed fixed income and currency solutions for JP Morgan in South and Southeast Asia for 8 years. And this is how we are going to go ahead. Now I'm going to hand over the mic to Mr. Vikas, who will in turn be handing over the mic to Mr. Ashish. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, hi, Ashish. Can you hear me?
Yes, Vikas, good to see you. Thank you. Hope you can hear me
Yeah,
clearly.
pleasure to have you on our session. You know, see, this conclave is all about alternate investing and portfolio management services. We thought who would be the better person than you, because you've been building up this platform so beautifully. And, you know, I would say that one of the largest platform, you know, when it comes to investing in global markets. We thought we'll invite you, read your mind, understand what's happening globally. Where the risk are, where risk is headed, where the economy is headed, and where the risk is coming from. And obviously, you know, while you are heading this organization, Crystal.ai, obviously you interact with most of the global fund managers also, and you also try and read their mind. So who would be the better person than you? So thank you so much for accepting our request and taking the time out from your busy schedule and joining in today.
It's a pleasure and honor to be here. Yeah, thanks a lot. Would love to spend the next 25, 30 minutes and walking people through our thoughts.
Right. So the agenda is very clear that we talked about what's happening globally. So maybe you can start with the presentation if you wish to, or maybe if you wish to share some slides, would you like to do so?
Yeah, sure. So we can, I think the slides should be visible. I hope it's clearly visible to everyone.
Yeah. Can you go to slide view if you don't mind, so that we can see the entire screen?
Sure. So I can just do the whole thing there. Is that okay?
Yeah, fine. Over to you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. Thanks, Vikas. So it's an honor to be here. A very good evening to everyone. So what I wanted to talk about today is about how the world is becoming multipolar and how global investing is getting a different kind of focus in this world today. So we'll jump into it, but very happy to take any questions, you know, or any thoughts that people want to brainstorm on. So quite happy to go into that. So what exactly is happening in the world today? You know, what has happened over the last, let's say, 7 to 8 years? So if you look at the world before, let's say, 2016 or 17, there was this whole era of globalization. In fact, the trend was so strong that you had people, you know, moving their assets in different countries. You had people moving into, you know, sitting in their homes and investing in 100 different exchanges. And that trend got stronger and stronger. But there was one key difference that started happening towards COVID. I think COVID was the first spanner in the works, which started disrupting supply chains, which started disrupting other equations. And the monetary policy easing that started, you know, the money printing, the QE that started after that had its different repercussions. So what is the key trend that we observed in the last, let's say, 5 years, let's say from 2015 to 2019? So what we saw over there was, especially from an India perspective, was the whole desire of the mass affluent or the high net worth population to become more and more global investor. So if you look at the theory that you know, the founders of Vanguard and similar asset managers have also propagated, any portfolio should have almost 18 to 20% of their investments outside of the domestic market, just to get the correlation benefit and to get the growth that other countries are experiencing. So while sitting in India, let's say if you were not investing outside India in 2000, let's say 9 onwards, in the tech cycle, then you would have missed out on the Teslas and Apples and Amazons of the world. And that's a segment that everyone wanted to capture. So so that's where the you know, sitting in one country, you can get access to growth, you know, in different countries, different exchanges, that was possible while getting the currency diversification. You know, we've done various analysis that shows that, you know, when there was a demonetization in India, you know, an investment in an S&P or NASDAQ would have been a good hedge. Similarly, let's say last year, when you've seen global markets falter, actually investments in India have done quite well. So there's always a correlation benefit that happens, you know, when it comes to investing, when you do a global as well as domestic portfolio. And in simple words, you know, it was the time for Indian residents or the Indian community to start owning the world. And that's where, you know, Crystal started playing into that growth segment and going into it. But then something different happened in, you know, after COVID, especially after the money printing effects started getting a bit lesser. Inflation started coming around, commodities started going up, and the supply chains were disrupted in such a manner that you literally had to make sure that you are getting access to raw materials or access to other commodities in a manner that it does not get disrupted. So, you know, the amount of waiting time to get a car, the amount of waiting time to get the chips in semiconductors just went through the roof. And that's when companies started realizing that we need to adjust the supply chains to make sure that we have, you know, continuous supply. We need to make sure that we are adapting to the rising energy costs. We need to make sure that COVID lockdowns don't disrupt our business. And that's where deglobalization and multipolarization started coming in, which is the impact that we saw across commodities, natural resources, talent. You know, there was an era of offshoring everything. Now there's an era of onshoring everything. So that's where the global corporates and supply chains start getting adjusted. And we are living in a new world where inflation, potentially stagnation, and a lot of volatility is going to be staying here. So what is deglobalization? And is it already here? So we can see that, you know, a lot of big corporates, you know, like the case in point you see of how Intel or Volvos or GMs of the world are looking at, you know, saying that let's focus closer to our home segment. There is inflation. There is supply chain disruption. Let's strengthen and double down in the markets where we are leaders. You know, and make sure that diversification is limited to adjacent markets rather than across global continents. We had Citi, for example, exit card businesses in India and even Southeast Asia. We have most of the American brands trying to get a factory set up in the US in response to the supply chain shocks. The China-Taiwan issues going on, and just the kind of almost Cold War, if I could call it that, that the US and China are playing in the semiconductor or other data space, you know, the TikToks of the world and so on, and Huawei's of the world, is causing, you know, major shifts in the overall deglobalization that we are here to say to see. Also, you see there is an inherent trust gap that is being developing in the countries between the superpowers in the last few years. And that trust gap is again leading to bans, you know, or supply chain disruptions across the world. But it's also creating a lot of opportunities. So there are many countries who are getting the beneficiaries of this. And I think India is one of them. You have the Vietnams and Indonesia, which are actually flourishing in this kind of an environment. You have India, which has a very robust domestic economy, which is doing quite well. And at the same time, valuations are getting corrected in the developed world. And there's a lot of opportunity being created over there, whether it's a private equity space or private credit space. And that's creating a lot of opportunities in manufacturing, in retail, in technology across the world. So that's the kind of deglobalization that is happening. Of course, 2022 and 2023 both seem to be years where you got to be cognizant of not burning too much into high growth, because there are either stagflationary clouds or inflationary clouds, or there is potentially a recession fear. And when the recession fears come, you know, it's very obvious, and if you see the data, that most people have lost money fearing a recession than in a recession. And that's where the objective of maneuvering such markets come into play, where wealth managers, AIFs, PMSs, I think we have all a fiduciary duty to make sure that clients can ride these waves and spot the money-making opportunities. So what exactly is the impact here, right? So as the supply chains got disrupted, tariff wars started, there was a lack of trust in different countries. So, and of course, there's a war going on in the Russia-Ukraine region. And of course, the oil and gas prices and supply chains also create a lot of issues. So while there was a globalized world, pre, let's say, the war or pre-COVID also, but now there's a lot of blocks happening. You know, so there is bilateral trade agreements between various countries. There's rupee-based settlements in certain commodities, let's say, between what India and Russia are doing. There is also yuan-based settlements that China is doing with a number of countries. So what happens is that there was a complete overall ecosystem which was developed, where, let's say, US dollar was a dominant currency, but that thing is changing and different currencies are getting, the power away from the US dollar. Does it mean the demise of the dollar? Not really. It still remains a global reserve currency. Yes, there are cryptos coming around the world, and there's a lot of believers who think Bitcoin or Ether can take over the world, but it's still very early days to take a call on that. But clearly, bilateral arrangements or tripartite arrangements are the way the world is evolving, rather than large trade blocks, just because of the inherent mistrust that most of the governments have between each other. What does this do? One thing this clearly does is rise in inflation, which means that inflation is not transitory. It is here to stay. Yes, it does fluctuate, come down a bit, go up a bit, but we are definitely looking at higher rates for longer. We are definitely looking at inflation being a lot more sticky. If you think that we are likely to see inflation go back to the 2% kind of a level in the US, which the US Federal Reserve wants to see, that probably is 18 to 24 months away, which means that all businesses have to adapt to the new normal that we are all facing today. So how does investing work in this world? What is it that one should do, given that volatility is definitely on the rise and given that energy prices are going to be higher, in the near future that we see? So clearly, investments are now getting more into the energy sector or even the EV sector. Production bases are shifting, which is where opportunities are being created. In India also, we have the, Make in Bharat, programs which are running quite well. There's a lot of factories being set up. And I think India's economy that is going to do quite well. But it also means that most of the Indian conglomerates, corporates, businesses can use this opportunity to make investments in various parts of the world where valuations are depressed, or buy into assets which are a lot more, giving a lot richer return today than, let's say, what they were giving in the zero interest rate era. US dollar is likely to face more challenges, going forward, given that the interest rate hike cycle in the US is almost over. There is no dominance of a US or a China or a Russia or an India in the global scale. And again, it's bilateral arrangements that is taking things forward and creating different supply chains. So basically, you will see volatility on the rise. There is a decoupling of markets between them, which also means that there will be certain markets where there is a lot more higher potential growth. China has been beaten down a lot. Indian stock markets have been a lot more stable in that manner, comparatively. And there is value emerging in many parts of the world. But I don't think we're out of the woods yet. So most of the investments that people are looking at, for example, in the Crystal platform, is going into various macro funds, low volatility alternatives, investment grade bonds, simple US treasuries, and certain structured payoffs or private credit kind of deals. So these are the things that, opportunities that every adversity creates, and something that most investors can make use of. But one thing is clear, that one has to be ready to be able to switch investments in a different domicile or geography, that you can get access to. We've seen an immense amount of rise in people taking citizenships or domicile in different countries. People from Russia, China, even India or Indonesia have gone and taken residency in Europe or US or UK and so on. And that's a trend that is, again, a result of a multipolar world, because people want to make sure that whether it's a COVID hitting them, whether it's politics hitting them, or whether it's business requirements that they have, needs them to diversify the residency of their money, the residency of themselves, or create different opportunities for how their businesses have to grow in future. So what are the other opportunities in this crisis, and why international markets? So if you see in the last couple of weeks, or let's say the last 2 months, there has been a tremendous boost in the amount of innovation that has come out. When you have the ChatGPT 3s and 3.5s and 4s coming out, when you have the next level of auto driving cars or self driving cars coming out, it basically is telling you that there is new opportunities being created, the new technologies coming, which are going to drive how the world changes. Space tech never existed probably 10 years ago, but today it's a healthy competitive field with number of startups in India also on it. Of course, you have the SpaceX and the other companies that Bezos and all those big guys are running. And this is where, having access to global investments, having access to private investments, whether it's credit or equity, comes into use. The best time to put money to work is when valuations are depressed. And history shows that, you should be buying good things at a reasonable value, and that's what the opportunities today are being created. And then you can hold it for a long term. Of course, diversification offers a huge correlation benefit, like we mentioned about, when there's demonetization in India, but there is a tech growth happening in another parts of the world, it changes. So the Middle Eastern markets are seeing tremendous rally thanks to the commodity prices or oil prices. But at the same time, you have recessionary clouds in certain segments, or you have the housing sector in the US feeding the strains. So just having the access, the platforms available, so that you can be nimble, you can move your investments across borders, that is key. And getting that readiness is of utmost importance for any portfolio today. You have hedge funds, you have macro funds, you have investment grade bonds, you have life settlement funds. A lot of these things is something that the investors did not even have access to, or did not even think about probably 2-3 years ago. But now they are becoming a mainstay of a set meal kind of a portfolio that people want to invest in. And those investments are the ones which are likely to give a very healthy return over the next 5-10 years, and in a consistent manner. And so diversification is definitely the key, because you cannot be just in one market anymore. You have to utilize opportunities from the crisis that we are seeing across the world today. So in terms of, just a few minutes, talking about how Crystal enables this access. So Crystal manages more than $1.2 billion, to be exact, it's about 1.35. And we are a partnership first, wealth operating system in sense, or a digital private bank, where we work with partners across India, Dubai, Singapore, Hong Kong, and so on, bringing access in a fractionalized manner to mass affluent, to high net worth, and providing the best-in-class financial solutions and infrastructure for global investments. So when you think global, think Crystal is the motto that we have across the world that we follow. As we just spoke about the investment committee having more than 150 years of experience. So we have people who've come from hedge funds, from banks, from prop trading shops, from private markets, investment banking, and basically, led by, a team of investors from Charity Ventures, Family Offices, Stride Ventures, and so on. I think it's a good amount of a stable and in-depth financial research that we make available to most of our clients. Just a quick word, cognizant of time, in terms of the products that are there. So it's not only just the ETFs, mutual funds, listed assets, it's also hedge funds, private credit funds, pre-IPOs, the like of SpaceX or Tiger Global or, Warburg Pincus that is there. Structured products, which is your MLD equivalents in the global world, that's available. And most importantly, I think it's model portfolios. It's the ability to set up model portfolios in partnership with most of the advisors, wealth managers, banks that we do, that I think differentiates the offering and gives us seamless access to people, whether it's via LRS or whether it's for clients who are outside India, which are looking to access the world. So domestic clients as accessing the globe, global clients accessing India, all those, and global clients accessing global investments, all those are, available through Crystal. And the idea is that open up the world to us, bring the world to us on our phones, on our time, on our location, because that's what the crowd wants today. It is time for Indian residents to own the world, to make sure that they have the ability at a few clicks to invest in whichever country they want, in whatever size they want, and in the right curation and advice that they deserve to get, irrespective of the size of their portfolio. That's the key motto that Crystal brings to the table, so that the clients and our partners can utilize those solutions better. So I'll take a quick pause here, not wanting to tom-tom too much about Crystal, but happy to take any questions or any discussions.
Sure. Sure. That's okay. The presentation was very insightful. Got to learn, yeah, what you rightly said, that Indian deserve to get the right advice, and it should be a one click away from them to invest whichever country they wish to participate. And obviously, there are many countries apart from India, they are also doing well. And obviously, as a strategic allocation, some amount of money should go, as you rightly said in your first statement, that at least 20 to 30%. So my first question is that only, is what should be the right allocation when you look at India? Because you see Indian story, which is building up very well, and people are saying that it's a golden decade for India. And then you have other countries which are emerging. So what's your say on that?
Yeah, so I would say now, so take a client, let's say, who's an investor who's, let's say, sitting in a Singapore or a Dubai, right? Especially if it's an NRI. So I would say that by definition, they would have investments, they would have affinity towards India. Now, India is going to be a high growth market for the next decade. There is more than $6 trillion of wealth just in the NRI segment waiting to get deployed. And that's getting deployed across the globe. And even if India can capture, like we said, at least an 80-20 rule, like 20% of your portfolio should get into your domestic, your international countries. So even if there is a client who's an NRI who considers India as, let's say, an international market, still 20% of that $6 trillion should come into India. So there's a $1.2 trillion, I would say, that should get invested into India. Similarly, if you take the wealth of India, right, the mass affluent and, the wealth here, that's upwards of $1 trillion. So actually, it's a lot more, but I'm removing the real estate part. So out of the $1 trillion, I think about 10 to 20%, so almost 100 to 200 billion should be invested into the global markets. So there should be $1 trillion coming into India. There should be $100 billion going out of India. And this is, I'm talking about a 5-year, 10-year horizon. But that's the kind of flow that should happen, because whoever does not have, that particular gulab jamun in their set meal, they need to get that gulab jamun back. And for NRIs, it's the Indian markets. For Indian residents, it's the global markets. And that two-way flow of money, that two-way flow of investments gives you diversification, gives you correlation benefits, gives you the ability to participate in the right markets in the right size. And that's exactly what I think all of us as an industry need to go for, rather than trying to, you know, be multipolar or trying to cause polarization. So I think it's our job to make sure that, you know, all the frictions are removed and transparency is delivered so that the clients can make the right choice of what should come into this set meal, which is more digestible to them.
There are two more questions quickly. The other thing is, you know, there are investors out there who are watching our show and they have enough network, but then they're not so familiar with these kind of products. How do they participate internationally? So this LRS route, that can you throw some more lights on that as far as Indian regulation is concerned, how much they can invest?
Yeah. So under LRS, you know, there is $250,000 US dollars of limit that you have every year that can go outside for investments or for, let's say, even travel purposes. There are various taxes which are changing in due course, which is not exactly a tax, but it's more of a TCS. So the amount that can go out is, I would say, realistically close to $200,000 every financial year. You know, that one can do. But within that 200,000, you can get fractionalized bonds, you can get fractionalized hedge funds, you can get fractionalized venture capital PE funds. So, you know, I have seen people, you know, in 2008, where the US dollar was, before the crisis, the US dollar was close to 40 rupees per dollar. And today it is around 81, 82 rupees to the dollar, right? So it's almost doubled. So people who were keeping, let's say, 1 crore rupees, for sending their kids abroad for an education in, let's say, the UK or a US, suddenly, you know, when the time for education came, realized that that same 1 crore, which used to be $250,000, turns out to be it's $125,000 now. So diversifying the currency and making sure that is kept in a right income or preservation manner so that it becomes part of the education portfolio is something that one needs to think of a lot before. You know, when your kids are in, let's say, below 10 years of age, so that by the time they become 18, 19, you have that kitty ready for them. So those are the kind of objectives that one needs to think of and got to think ahead. So I'm not just talking about a retirement. Here we're talking about, you know, you want to go and own property abroad. You want to go and travel abroad. You want to send your children abroad for studies. So that client base needs to start thinking of a global portfolio much sooner than later. Similarly, if there are, you know, global investors, if they want to participate in venture capital or private equity that's going into India, or they want to participate in AIFs or PMSs that are going into angel investments or, you know, other listed markets. So they've got to think about, you know, how do I participate in this growth so that the next 10 years I can get a very well diversified portfolio, and irrespective what kind of a roller coaster ride the markets go through, because they will go through that. You know, every few years you will have volatility coming and staying for a while. So you need to make sure that the diversification is in place and there is a proper structured thought process on how a set meal of a portfolio is to be created, you know, which be done much before in your life cycle than later. And the good thing is that fractionalized investments, you can do it in smaller sizes. Nobody is unwelcome, you know, in today's world. Whether it's $50,000, $500,000, or $50 million, the same portfolio can be delivered to everyone in that size.
Yeah, that's the beauty of your platform also, because we have been using it and we saw that even with small amount, one can start the investment, build an experience around, and then think about doing a right strategic allocation. So that's wonderful. Yes. Last question from my side quickly. So which are the other countries that you see as, you know, when you talk to these countries and their portfolio managers, which is shaping up as good as India in next 5-10 years?
So we've seen a lot of growth. So I'll talk about more Asia. So, you know, China has been a bit of a doldrums, given that there's a lot of regulatory political overhang there. So I think people should still kind of be wary of investing there. But I think the real growth engines in Asia are India, Indonesia, and Vietnam. And you can access these countries through simple ETFs or funds which are focusing in these countries, and they can be made available, you know, through various feeder structures, either via Singapore, Mauritius, Dubai, and so on. And of course, GIFT City is coming up really well for, you know, becoming a feeder into India or even outside. So I think, you know, it's the India, Indonesia, Vietnam, which are shaping up really well over here. Of course, there is a big booming market in the Middle East, as the oil kind of rally is commodities rally is shaping up there. And I think, well, this decade should belong to the countries like India and Indonesia, but I think if you think 20 years, you'll see a big change coming in countries from Africa too. And I think that will be a story for the 2030s, while 2020s is owned by India.
Great, wonderful speaking with you. Great reading your mind, got an understanding of how the globe is and how it is shaping up. So thank you so much, Ashish. It was great presentation, and we really got to learn a lot from you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vikas. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Yeah, thank you.